Welcome to episode 78 of Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson and Michael Lucas Smith. This week we kind of have a this and that sort of episode. We talked about small talk in the past, small talk now, kind of where small talk is going, should be going, maybe ought to go. Kind of this and that all over the place conversation. Hope you enjoy it. If you have feedback, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com or visit us at iTunes, Facebook, or the Small Talkers group at Ning, or please cast a vote for us over at Podcast Alley. So we're Dave-less.
Yep.
Oddly enough, we decided to do this at a time of day that isn't completely indecent, and of course Dave wasn't available.
Yeah. This is Dave's topic, too.
So he stole his topic.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. You missed the Randall Schwartz interview because you confused him and Randy Coolman.
I did indeed.
Well, it's because they're so similar. It's hard to keep them separated.
Yep.
So I guess since you're mentioning the topic, why don't you introduce it for us?
Okay. Let me see if I can get this right. Then and now. Is that right? There we go.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to edit out all that coughing.
That was part of it. Come on.
I think I'll take the lung off my chest. All right, so what Dave, I think, had in mind was that a lot of people think of small talk as an old language. And if they've heard of it at all, they think that it's something that inspired a lot of stuff that's going on now, but isn't necessarily relevant to what they do or doesn't have anything new in it. So I think the idea was to go through some of the ways small talk has changed over the last 5, 10, 15 years. And I don't know, you've been doing small talk for how long now?
Over a decade.
Okay, so not as long as I have, I guess, but that's...
Not that old. You're pretty old.
Thanks, I appreciate your support. kids today, there's no respect for their elders. So yep. I've been doing small talk since about 92, and I can tell you that when I started in VisualWorks, it was at the VisualWorks 1.0 release had just come out, and for an indication of just how far back that would be in terms of the way people think about software, VisualWorks 1.0 shipped simultaneously with ObjectWorks 4.1 from what was then Park Place. And the reason the two of them shipped was that the then leadership of Park Place thought that it was important to have the real version without a GUI builder in it because real programmers didn't need a GUI builder.
Right. So he's a Unix guy?
she, actually. But that was actually, from what I understand, that was kind of Adele Goldberg's outlook on things at the time. Uh-huh. So anyway, that kind of tells us how far back that was. And one of the things Dave put on this list was namespaces. And, of course, up until VisualWorks 5i shipped in 1999, I don't know if any implementation of Smalltalk had namespaces. I mean, maybe Smalltalk X had been playing around with them, but I don't think any implementation had namespaces up to that point.
I think one thing that's, you know, obviously changed with Smalltalk is that over the years, it's become more and more integrated into the different operating systems. I think prior to that, Smalltalk was definitely its own thing. You can even see that in Squeak. Squeak is like the penultimate I'm my own thing, yet even it is integrating more and more into the operating system.
Yeah, and actually that was one of the interesting things about, I can't remember, maybe it was after ObjectWorks 2.5, this is before my time, but some of the earlier versions of what was then called ObjectWorks looked more like what Squeak is now, where you had the big window inside of which all the other Smalltalk windows lived. And Squeak still does that. Now, you know, garish color schemes aside, one of the bigger complaints for people looking to do client applications in Squeak is the fact that you don't get native windows. I mean, never mind native widgets, you don't get native windows.
Mm. Yeah. Well, we're talking about a language that was the machine. It's kind of ironic that people don't, you know, you get people who say, oh, you can't use Smalltalk to make an operating system. But that's what it started out as, an operating system on its own hardware, which is really quite amazing.
Well, it's also part of why it's classically been perceived or actually been hard to integrate with native facilities, because Smalltalk kind of had this notion that it was the operating system, and even in something like VisualWorks, you can see the legacy of that all over the system, where there are abstractions for things that you would think there shouldn't necessarily be abstractions for. Maybe it'd be smarter to hook up to the platform facilities, but that's just the way it was.
Well, I mean, you can even see it in some of the people who have been around for a while. They're kind of completely out of touch with the expectations of how the different platforms work, the operating systems work, the software on those operating systems work, because this very small talk sort of isolate them from that, and they don't step out of that bounds very often.
Yeah, well, to some extent, we even saw that last week with the conversation we had about editing and viewing methods, and that itself was chained off a blog post that I put up about that topic, and that blog post generated more comments than my blog normally generates. And then, interestingly enough, that podcast generated more downloads than I normally get, although for all the downloads, I haven't seen a comment on it yet. But I still don't know whether having multiple methods in one view in a small talk system is a good thing or a bad thing, but it does demonstrate that that topic is of interest to small talkers.
Yeah, I'm not sure that quite fits in the same league of what we're talking about here, but yeah.
Yeah, so in any case, if you want to go back to ways things have changed, obviously namespaces have been added to the system, and we could probably go on for a while about whether the way namespaces read was a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, let's not.
Yeah, let's leave sleeping dogs lie for a little bit. But that's one way it's changed. I mean, Smalltalk has namespaces, didn't used to. There's another thing that not a lot of people really understand how or why this is different. But if you were to go back in VisualWorks 3, and I think in all other Smalltalks for that matter, you have these things called class variables, and we now insist on calling them shared variables. And there's some sense as to why they're called shared variables, and it's because even a class variable, the idea is that the definition is shared up and down the class hierarchy where it's defined. But the name was originally in 5i, and I think all the way through 5i4, we were using in the documentation static variables.
There's also pool variables in Visual Age. But I guess one of the things that's different with shared variables and all those previous mechanisms is that you can extend the class and add them. And I think that's a big bonus. I mean, we're talking about pretty small changes here, though. I think the outlook of libraries and stuff in Smalltalk has changed a fair bit as well. For example, you would never have conceived of writing a regex library before the Unix world really started to take off with Linux and open source, but now we have regex. Or web services. I mean, even now, web services is still a ridiculous concept, but we've got web services, you know. So The proof of the pudding with Smalltalk was always that you could do things faster and more easily, and a very small number of people produce these libraries that are very compatible across the industry.
Well, I've got actually a good example of that kind of thinking too, is that if you go back to VisualWorks 3, I have a t-shirt that was released with VisualWorks 3 by ObjectShare. And the t-shirt has VisualWorks 3 on the front and the old icon of the triangle, sphere, and I think rectangle or square. And on the back, the little catchphrase that went with it was VisualWorks, the tool of choice for network developers. And if you thought about that, you'd wonder what exactly about VisualWorks 3 would network developers have done?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we had VisualWave back then. So there was a way to do web applications, and there was a plugin for doing browser-based apps with Smalltalk code being downloaded the same way Java applets were downloaded. But if you wanted to make an HTTP request, you couldn't do that without taking some open source code that some guy had thrown up on the UIUC shared Smalltalk server. I mean, at the time, the wiki wasn't even there, so you had to go digging around to find somebody's version of an HTTP library. There were no FTP libraries, so saying that it was the choice for network developers is kind of a stretch. I mean, even those of us at Park Place at the time thought it was kind of a weird thing to say.
I wonder if maybe Smalltalk has become more humble over the years as well, because Smalltalk's always had this prevailing view of, you know, it's the best, you can do anything you need to do in it faster, better, you know, and be easy to maintain, all that kind of stuff. And all that stuff's true, but unless you actually go the hard miles and implement these libraries that people actually need, it's for nothing. You know, it doesn't really help you at all. So I think, you know, the diversification of the different libraries that are available in Smalltalk, we're seeing more and more things hooking up to native libraries or open source libraries, etc. I hope that means that Smalltalk has become more humble.
Well, I think it has. I mean, the thing is that as many shots as we've taken on this podcast, even at some of the more dominant languages like Java and C#, the reality is that there are libraries in those languages, and for that matter, in the older C language, there are libraries for doing just about everything you could imagine doing. Now, could you, in theory, have written those faster and maybe even more cleanly in Smalltalk? Sure, probably, if you had enough people actually doing it. But the reality is that for many reasons, there have always been more C programmers running around than there are Smalltalk programmers. So because of that, there have always been more libraries in C. And I think it's kind of foolish to decide I'm always going to write my own version of the library in Smalltalk just because that would be the best choice. Well, maybe it's not the best choice if there's already a library you could perfectly well use.
Yeah. I think there's also a legacy of design patterns and implementation details from Smalltalk as well. A lot of the big thought leaders in the industry started with Smalltalk at Park Place. You know, we get our laptops and our mouse interfaces and our GUIs and all that kind of stuff from Smalltalk. But, you know, a lot of those technologies have moved on and progressed, yet some of the people and some of the Smalltalks haven't kept up. For example, the whole BitBlip paradigm died a few years ago. Well, actually many years ago, with the introduction of 3D cards and point-based rendering, etc. In fact, you know, it really, really died when Mac OS X came out for the first time, because that integrated both 3D rendering and point-based in, graphics as the way to draw. Yet, I'm not sure there's a Smalltalk around that actually has that in its core, that they're still kind of bitblitting. I mean, we came up with the bitblit, which is great, but that doesn't mean that that's the be-all and end-all story there. Things move on, and we need to move on with them.
Well, any language that's been around for a while gets somewhat hidebound. I mean, Smalltalk has some hidebound aspects to it that way. I mean, for that matter, so does Java. I mean, if you think about it, the people behind Java have decided that the most important thing is backwards compatibility, so that Java code that was written in 1996 will still operate. Now, there's value to that, obviously, but at the same time, it means that they've been very, very adamant about not changing the VM.
I have to disagree with you, because if you take a language like C, it's not hard bound to a concept like bitblitting at all. In fact, you know, it's very open, and that, I think that's the true test of time.
No, I don't mean C. I'm talking about the insistence to not change the VM over in the Java.
No,
well, that's all I'm talking about.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, you know, if Smalltalk can't keep up because there are too many ingrained concepts in it, then that's a failure of Smalltalk. Now, that's not true. That's not the way it actually is, but that's why you would look at something like COBOL and say, okay, well, that doesn't stand the test of time, or you know, Smalltalkers look at Java and go, that won't stand the test of time, which it hasn't been. And the answer in some communities is, okay, fine, we'll just make a new language. But if you look at C, the C world, they've never had to do that. And that's the true test of a real language is, can you keep adapting it to new concepts, etc.? And that is the case for Smalltalk, and Smalltalk's gone through various evolutions over its time. The real question to our users is, will it continue to be able to do that? And that sort of comes back to the whole namespaces thing. That's a reason namespaces exists.
There's a good example of how Smalltalk is changing and adapting to keep up with modern times. I mean, if you, again, go back to the beginning of Smalltalk, what was Smalltalk best known for back in the old days? It was the thing you used to prototype GUIs and to build client-server GUI-based systems. That was what it was known for, and for that matter, there are probably plenty of people who still think of it as that kind of thing. But I think most people picking up Smalltalk now are probably more jazzed by web stuff and C-side. And if you're building a C-side-based app, the only client presentation you're really interested in is in the web browser, you know, unless maybe there's a GUI for doing server-side admin of some kind. But generally speaking, that's going to be on a remote server anyway, so it's still all through the browser.
Yeah, right. Smalltalk's moved on and adapted. And I think that's really kind of key. You know, a good language will do that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that we haven't stayed static. We have moved on with something like C-side. And, you know, the interesting thing to me about C-side, I'll tell you, is that, and this is going to sound kind of like a funny thing for the product evangelist to say, is that C-side did not come from any of the Smalltalk vendors. So it proves all by itself that there is a vibrant community around Smalltalk that isn't necessarily vendor-based, because, you know, the instantiations guys didn't come up with it. Those, you know, us guys here at SynCom didn't come up with it. The Object Arts guys didn't think of it. The community around GNU Smalltalk didn't think of it. Smalltalk X guys didn't. It came out of the Squeak world with the rather large and raucous crowd that hangs around Seaside. That's where it came out, and that's where it got built up.
Yeah, I'd say that there's a general overdependence on vendors in the Smalltalk community for various libraries. Like, I know that the web services implementation for Ruby didn't come from the guys who wrote Ruby, right? And in fact, the web services implementation that I first used in Java used Sun VM. It's almost a case of this dependence means the community is not going to contribute anything because we'll just ask the vendor to do it and they'll do it. Whereas in the Squeak community, you got the opposite. It's no one else is going to do this, so I'm going to do it and contribute it. Now, I think the Visual Works community is starting to build up to the point where they're confident in going off in their own directions and doing things. But at the same time, it's hard to find that kind of critical mass or to kind of convince yourself that's the right thing to do. Like, there's someone who decides to make their own web framework, for example, like Janko Mivsek. You know, should he do it or shouldn't he do it? And the old prevailing Smalltalk idea would be, no, the vendor will make us the framework and use it. Whereas the open source world is more like along the lines of, well, I'll just make it. And if other people like it, then they can use it too. And there are certain sorts of cultural idioms that are required to have that happen well. And they're new to most Smalltalk communities.
Yeah, but I think you're seeing more of that now. I mean, if you look at the fact that Seaside is out there now as an open web framework that is being either ported to or supported in all the major Smalltalks that are out there. I mean, even the instantiations guys are talking about adding continuations to the VM so that they have a full-bore Seaside implementation. If you look at the way database stuff is being picked up, every vendor has their own database implementation on the lower end. But at the higher end, it looks like Glorp is spreading across multiple Smalltalks now, and I know that people talk about Glorp and Seaside and Squeak almost as much as we talk about it here at Syncom.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess one of the reasons why this happened was you take a language like C, and you'd be very lucky if the vendor would provide you with something that you would trust not to be dumped on you a couple of years down the road, and, you know, especially from Microsoft. Microsoft was kind of the classic there.
Yes.
Alternatively, you would often just get this environment that came with basically nothing. Like you get a Pascal implementation from Borland and it came with nothing. Or you get a C implementation from, at the time, IBM and it came with nothing.
Right.
And so, you know, with the Smalltalk world, it was so easy for the vendor to go and produce these libraries because the language is so powerful like that, that they did. And everybody got so used to that. And then now the world is starting to introduce incredibly complex things that regardless of how quickly you can implement it in Smalltalk, the ideas behind them are so esoteric and silly, like web server, for example, that, you know, even the vendors struggle to get these things right. And in fact, the biggest vendors in the world, IBM, Microsoft, Sun, they all struggle to make web services work right.
Well, I've seen the web services movie before. Back in the 90s, it was called Corba. I mean, the movie is the same. The only thing that's changed is the transport layer. You know, it's really no different than it was then. And back in the day, you couldn't get two different orbs to talk to each other without waving the magic wand in exactly the right way. And now you can't get two different web services stacks to talk to each other for the same reasons. It's really no different than it used to be. And, you know, the more interesting problem with that is asking whether web services or Corba are even the right approach. Is doing some kind of distributed object system where you're passing complex objects around, is that even the right approach for most problems?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you start wanting to do it for real, like scaling up, you actually enter grid computing, where you need to transfer resources around, do computing on them, and transfer results around, etc. And it's such a different world to distributed communication and object distribution.
Right.
And then when you like you take it to the other extreme, you're not talking about number crunching. You're talking about a different kind of number crunching. Say you want to make a massively multiplayer online game. You're, again, not going to use distributed object communication. The latency is too high for that sort of thing. So it comes down to the question of, okay, this technology is meant to be cheap communications, high bandwidth, low latency, and very little of it. Otherwise, you know, you're going to get bad UI lag. So if you look at it in that light, it's never going to be appropriate for a large-scale system, especially one that's going to be distributed across the internet. And that's the idea of web services, is to distribute these communication layers across the internet.
Right.
So in actual fact, what you want is a protocol that's designed for high latency and designed for long wait times for a response. And we already have one of those, and that's HTTP, which is okay. Hence the rest.
It's easy to use. It doesn't really matter what language or library you use on either end of the communication. It's such a simple protocol.
Yeah, but it comes down to the idiom, right? It's what in your mind, what kind of communication are you going to do, right? Because, you know, web services implemented on top of HTTP. But when you get to that level of, okay, now it's a transparent message send, transferring objects around, you're thinking at the wrong level for the technology you're using. That would be like trying to use a mobile phone 10 years ago to do live video conferencing using SMS. Oh, yeah, we've got SMS. It's a communication mechanism that is reasonably guaranteed. We can split up the video information and send it as little SMSs across. You know, that's basically what we're saying here. And the really, really funny thing about all this is that what we're talking about here is large distributed broadcasts. There's already broadcast protocols on the internet as well. So it's yet again another reinvention of the wheel on top of something that didn't need.
You can even see a real-world example of a company, and a fairly large and prominent one, that attempted to push out a WSR stack for solving a problem. I mean, Google back in 2000, 2001 had a spec for doing web services APIs for search. And I hooked Bottom Feeder into it so that you could call that API and get search results back into your RSS tool. And it was used for a while, and you needed to get a key from Google, but they were okay with giving it to you. But over time, they first pulled keys off the net so that you couldn't do that. And maybe it still works, I'm not really sure, but I think they even just eliminated the entire API because they discovered that even if you have the large-scale infrastructure that Google has, just doing even something simple, like relatively simple, like search through web services is complicated enough that people won't bother.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, why do these things exist? And I think the answer to that is that we want to reduce the cost of engineering. You know, if you were building this application, you actually had to think about how you were going to use the network, what you were going to send across it, and how you were going to do that, and then communicate that with the partners that you were going to work with. And if you did that successfully, you would come up with something incredibly good, right? But We're trying to live in a world where we don't have the time for that or don't want to put the effort into that. Ironically, we have to put in more effort in the end. And really, when it comes down to it, the idea here is that I'll be able to have a million clients who can hook up to this interface, and I won't have to physically, as a person-to-person communication, interact with them to get this happening. But in reality, when you put up most of these web services, you're dealing with a very select, specific set of clients. And even with web services, you end up doing lots and lots of face-to-face contact to get it to work. So you abstracted it to a different level. You need a skill set that is not as technically competent to get the result done. However, you possibly end up spending more time in the long run because of that.
And the funny thing is that we did web services in Syncom Smalltalk because we were pretty sure that it was going to be an important thing, or at least a checkbox thing. And certainly it is and was a checkbox item. We wouldn't be taken seriously if we didn't do it. But the ironic thing is that while it's essential for us to have it, in the grand scheme of things, not that many people are making that broad scale use of it. So it's one of those crazy things where as a vendor you have to provide it, but the number of people that actually want it is not that high.
That's right. So like that's an interesting counterexample of now and then. You know, back then, Smalltalk would never have even considered humoring an outside entity's specification.
Yeah.
and then now we're at a position where hopefully we look at these outside specifications and pick the ones we actually like and implement instead of just following the consultant's vibe from various magazines and reports.
And enterprisey types.
Enterprise. Yeah, that's right. And you leave that stuff up to the people who actually care about it. I mean, you want to evolve that community. If Web Services Plus comes out,
right.
Let somebody else in the community do it and sell it, mm-hmm. instead of having the vendor do all of that. And, you know, that actually allows the vendor to spend more time on stuff that actually matters to you, which is making it easy for you to make Web Services Plus.
Right. I mean, the thing is that if the tools aren't easy to use, then it's going to be hard to build those libraries. So the vendor has to make sure that whatever tools they provide are decent to use and easy to use and, you know, aren't painful. And that's actually an interesting aspect on the whole then and now thing, too, is that for years, Smalltalk kind of rested on its laurels of we have the best browsing tools, we have the best debugging tools, we have the best inspecting tools. And I think to a large extent, there are aspects of that that are still true, but if you look at something like Eclipse or NetBeans or even Visual Studio, there are plenty of things those tools provide that would be very nice to have in Smalltalk. I mean, I don't think, for instance, that I would personally make that much use of code completion, but I know that there are plenty of people who would.
Yeah, I think code completion is one of those things that if it works well and it's there and you don't have to do anything to have it there, you kind of get a bit used to it.
Now, what I'm saying is there's a whole bunch of things like that that those tools provide that in some ways Smalltalk developers have been insulated away from that reality long enough that they've kind of forgotten that the rest of the field is advancing, whether they're interested or not.
Yeah, actually, that's a good example. If we go back to the whole expanded methods thing and the idea of the file idiom, and Smalltalk is not generally considered to be file-based programming, but that's the source code files are only just one little bit of your project. The actual outputted executables, debug symbol tables, linking libraries, external resources like sounds, graphics, XML specifications, icons, the data files, symbol tables, localization, translations. There are a lot of things that go into an application, and the Smalltalk environments ignore all of those things.
Oh, sure. I mean, this is I'll have to now enter into the first rule of our podcast. I'll have to mention Bottom Feeder again. This is something that I learned the hard way when I first started building Bottom Feeder, that there's all that stuff that you have to ship. You know, there were images for things like the splash screen and images for things like the icons on various toolbars and whatnot. And the message catalogs that I eventually added, even though nobody's done a translation, but I did go through that exercise, there are a whole bunch of ancillary things that aren't part of the Smalltalk code. And Smalltalkers have classically thought, oh, it's all encapsulated in the image. But if you actually go to the trouble of building an application that you then go to the trouble of deploying, you discover exactly what you just went through. There's all this extra stuff that you have to deploy.
Well, I mean, it's kind of worse than that because well, in VisualWorks and Object Studio at least, we've got Store. And Store is all about the Smalltalk code. I mean, it models the Smalltalk code to the nth degree, and it knows Smalltalk, right? Mm-hmm. Store is just a brilliant Smalltalk code repository. However, like I was just saying, that's not the entirety of your project. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even the settings you save in your image are part of your project. I can't find the words to describe how mind-boggling it is that this can have gone on for so long.
Well, think of a simple Smalltalk application for the web that isn't Seaside. You know, think about, well, actually, even if it is Seaside, you probably have your CSS files outside of Seaside, right? I mean, you could have them in Seaside, but that's still stuff you have to version.
Oh, I'll go on a rant about that as well. I mean, even Seaside perpetuates the myth that everything's going to be an image by having WA file library. And WA file library, you upload your files from disk into the class and it stores them as a byte array. So you run a method, you get the bytes back and you can send them to the client.
Okay.
And that, it's just silly. I mean, you start getting into, say, I need to put this flash control on the page. I'm not going to go into the flash development tool, do the compilation, and then upload that back into the squeak image just to put that flash on the page.
Well, wouldn't that increase your memory usage potentially on some dramatically awful basis?
It could. But I guess what I you know, the climax of this kind of rant here is that all of these other files you're dealing with are not integrated into the development environment in a way that makes sense and probably never will be. Yet then you get things like, okay, we've got our store, for example, can store binary files into it. So and C-sides with WA file libraries, you can upload the files into the classes. I mean, this is just not on. I have tools in my development in my operating system specifically designed and engineered over the last 30 years for dealing with files, moving files around, copying files, lots of command line programs for transforming and manipulating files, and we're going to ignore all that?
Well, sure, we're small talkers. That's what we do.
And we certainly don't have the time and resources to rewrite all those things, and why would we? Why would we want to? I mean,
no, there's a funny story about that, even with regard to store. When it was first proposed that we have some mechanism for handling files in store, and at this point you can attach files into store, like you just mentioned, and the sole purpose of that would be really that you're versioning some code off, and you want to make sure that at the very least the file that was associated with that version goes into the repository. But one of the arguments that came up when we were talking about that is, oh, we'd have to build all these diffing and merging tools if we wanted to do that. And at the time, I thought of this more as the perfect is the enemy of the good enough argument. But I think it's actually more what you're talking about is that it's the idea that the whole thing had to somehow be wrapped into small talk.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a balance here somewhere. This is almost a now and later argument, more than a now and then. Then and now. So I'm not sure where this is going to go in the future, but it needs to go somewhere because it's quite true that you can't have everything in your image and you really don't want to. I think more so in the web world too, because in the web world you do have all of these external resources, static and non-static.
Well, if you're serving, if you push everything into the image that you're going to be serving, some of those things that you're going to be serving are quite large. And you don't want to necessarily load them in your image because, I mean, if say it's a video file. Video files can be rather large. If 10 people ask for the video file, do you want to make the server fall over?
Yeah, and these aren't just like, that's not just content on my website. This is part of my program. It's part of the help system. It's something that I need to version control. It's something that needs to be taggable and releasable and reproducible. And we can't go on trying to do it the way we're doing it. But, you know, at the same time, surely we can do things better than... well, maybe we can't. I mean, we're talking about... Smalltalk has evolved a whole area of computing all in its own lonesome and done it better than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean we focused on absolutely every area of computing. Now, the Unix world has gone off and done a whole bunch of stuff with streaming and files and all that kind of stuff, and we haven't touched that area. And they've come up with a whole bunch of solutions that work really well for people. And now we're starting to converge in this, and we're saying, well, we need some of those facilities too. We should just pick them up.
It boils down to one of the old adages the software developers are really supposed to understand, which is pick the right tool for the right job.
Well, I think we've probably ranted enough about that. I'm sure Dave will be turning in his bed or whatever going, no, that's not how I wanted to do it.
Well, if it's not how he wanted to do it, that leaves the conversation free for next time he's back.
Yeah. Well, I guess that wraps it up for today then.
All right, then. That wraps it up. Bye.
Okay. Talk to you later. Bye.
Here's Dave Buck with this week's Cimbron Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbron Design Minute. One software development practice I often see is designers trying to anticipate features they believe they'll need later and trying to implement them early. This is called speculative generality. Speculative generality usually leads to overdesign. It adds complexity early and requires the developers to deal with the complexity long before it's actually needed. By the time the feature is needed, chances are the requirements have changed or the system is structured differently and the existing implementation isn't sufficient. The objective of object-oriented development is to develop a system that can adapt to change. Take advantage of it. Don't try to code features in before they're needed. If you have a good design, you can add the feature later when you really need it and understand better how it works. How do you make sure your design is good enough to allow you to change it later? you build your design incrementally and refactor quickly and frequently. This has been the Cimbron Design Minute. Cimbron offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.cimbron.com or email info@cimbron.com.
Here's James Savage with this week's Smalltalk Jobs Report.
I'm James T. Savage, and this is the Smalltalk Jobs Report. Los Angeles, California. San Diego Gas and Electric has a permanent position for a software developer who has experience with mainframes, JCL, COBOL, CICS, DB2, and who has good communication skills. Experience that is considered a plus includes Visual Age, .NET, and OOAD. Minneapolis, Minnesota. IT Trailblazers, LLC, has a 9-plus-month contract for a software developer who has good communication skills. Scottsdale, Arizona. Teledirect International is looking for a software engineer, object-oriented developer, who has object-oriented programming experience or education, and has excellent communication skills. Experience that is considered a plus includes telephony, Java, Smalltalk, Visual Age, .NET, C++, and C#. This permanent position pays $55,000 to $95,000 per year. North America. Syncom has two more senior software engineer positions open. The engineers will be working on the core areas of the VisualWorks and Object Studio products. They are looking for someone who has familiarity with the internals of the VisualWorks tool set and experience with store, version control, OO design, user interface design and implementation, and Smalltalk. Experience that is considered a plus includes relational databases and virtual machines. These are a North American work-at-home positions. These are just a few examples of the Smalltalk positions that are currently open across the world. For more details, visit my blog, Message Sends with an Undefined Object. Good luck with your job hunting.
And that about wraps it up for this week on Industry Misinterpretations. Hope you enjoyed that. Again, if you have feedback, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com or visit us on Facebook, iTunes, Podcast Alley, or the Smalltalkers group over at Ning. Till next week, have fun with Smalltalk.